time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Right on, Phil Goff, what's happening?
Hi, morena. I had to say that just to please Don Brash. He, you know how he loves the Maori language on radio. What's happening? It's a beautiful day in Auckland. It's 18 sleeps to Christmas, and I can't even start thinking about it because
people like Don Brash are wasting our time with that crap, hey? Seriously, yeah. Man. Seriously, you anyway. Old, backward, old, dusty old man. What are you thinking about that even for, Don?
Yeah. Look, it was funny because I listened to that interview as I went across to the Naval graduation ceremony on Saturday morning over on the North Shore at Devonport.
Beautiful North Shore. Yep.
And fantastic ceremony. You know, there were 93 graduates, sailors and officers, and they finished up, you know, with their saying their commitments in Maori and a haka, and I thought that's our point of difference with the world. You know, these are people that they were European, they were Maori, they were Pacifica, they were Chinese, they were Korean. There was a Japanese Kiwi sailor there, and the thing that stood out was that, you know, here is something that's unique to our culture, and, you know, okay, most of us don't speak Te Reo more than a few phrases, but let's acknowledge that is a unique part of our culture. It is an official language. What harm does it do? What's he bitching about? Is that the biggest problem in the world that we need to solve? Not in your life, you know. Just embrace it, Don. Go with the flow.
What a dated old thing to worry about. Like I say, here we are wasting our time talking about it.
Let's get on to something more important.
When we could be talking about the helicopters over my house.
Oh, the helicopter.
Don't you give me that exasperated sigh, your worship.
I spoke to, look, I had the three police district commanders in, all women, by the way, and I raised that and they said...
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. I raised it. I went to the top for you, Mikey.
I'll tell you what, before you carry on, Phil, let me just play you. This is last night at my home.
Yep.
Okay, just as a... Wait on, I'm just going to go. Beautiful. Hear the crickets in the background there? Here we go. Here comes the one of the just flying. Does this sound like it's just flying overhead? Well, listen carefully.
That was only for a few minutes.
That's the first time it went over.
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me, but my child's trying to sleep. You know, yeah. God's sake, yeah. Man. That's
no. It is a pain, but hey, it's probably a necessary pain.
Yeah,
I talked to them about the impact of the Eagles now flying 24/7. Well, not the same helicopter. They've obviously got a.
There's got to be other parts of the city where there's crime going on, apart from our neighbourhood.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing in your backyard that they keep hovering in? What are you
yelling out?
Those aren't tomato plants in your backyard, Mikey.
Excuse me. Tamarillo.
Yeah.
tree tomato. I'm out the back pulling the fingers to the helicopter, obviously.
Security lights. No, they're saying it does have a dramatic impact on their ability to track down people who are offending criminally. It might be bank robberies, it might be dangerous driving, it might be a range of different things.
What about this? Let's reach a compromise this way. Can we have a little list of situations attended to by the helicopter each night? Because I'm sorry, it's just over there for two. If you can't catch them in an hour, then get the ground people working a bit harder. Get those dogs that you see on TV working, you know?
Yeah. There is nothing.
Noisy.
Let me just give you one example. We know that when we've got a bunch of teenagers in a car driving dangerously, often under the influence of alcohol, and you put a road patrol to follow it through, you know it's going to end up in tragedy.
Yeah.
They can do the same thing in terms of actually getting the culprit with the helicopter, without creating the same danger on the ground. But look, I'm going to go up in the helicopter probably over the Christmas period.
Can I come?
I'll put in a bid for you, mate.
That'll shut me up.
Only if you promise never to complain again.
No, I appreciate the fact that you went and had a chat to some of the big cheeses about it, Phil.
I know what it's like because I've been in town and around when the Eagles overhead, and it is noisy. Helicopters are bloody noisy machines, and if you've got a wee child, that makes it, you know, that gives you a...
It keeps me up more than the child, to be honest.
Baby sleeps through and Mikey's there.
But without a word of a lie, we had maybe 15, 20 people call up and text and email in after our conversation last week saying exactly the same thing, who live in the same place. But anyway, shall we move on from that, because that sounds like I'm being self-serving. What about how long it took you guys yesterday to work out this curry dieback disease thing?
Well, it was. We started at 9:30 in the morning. I had a speaking engagement in South Auckland at 4 o'clock, so I had to excuse myself from the meeting
at 4 o'clock.
At 3:30, and I thought, exactly. But look, I'm not criticising the. It was very ably chaired by Penny Hulse, who's our chair of Environment and Community, and we had a big public input. You know, one of the.
We should probably explain more what we're talking about. We're talking about the disease. The Waitakere's. Which we've identified as potentially could destroy the kauri population.
I've forgotten the name of it.
It's kauri dieback disease, isn't it?
There's a scientific name.
I'm not a scientist.
Phytophthora, I think, or something like that. Phytophthora, that's the one. And what it does is that there's no cure for it at the moment. We're trying phosphite treatment, which slows down the disease. But it could destroy our most precious, mighty kauri trees right across the Waitakere. It's growing at a fantastic rate, fantastic meaning bad, from 7.9% of trees affected 5 years ago to 19% of the trees affected when we published the study earlier this year. And, you know, it's bad enough having myrtle rust affecting our pahutukawas. This is killing, you know, the king of the forest, the kauri. So we have to do something about it. So what we had, first of all, was public input, and that took a lot of time, but I think it was worthwhile. We had the local board, we had environmentalists, we had people that are concessionaires that use the park as part of tourist activities for West Auckland, and we had a thorough discussion, and we reached an agreement, and I moved the motion together with Penny Hulse, that it was towards the most radical of the responses to it, which is we will be closing a whole lot of high and medium risk tracks. We don't think it's possible to close off the whole of the Waitakere. I don't know how many thousand hectares it is. I think it's about 15,000 hectares.
Too residential, too, a lot of it.
Titirangi Village is right.
It's a gateway to our hot beaches.
Yeah. So you can't. I mean, there's a thousand different entry places to it, and short of a barbed wire, razor wire, or electric fence around it, and even that probably wouldn't work. What you've got to do is you've got to get active public cooperation. Now, say we close everything, people will still walk through it. If we close the most high-risk areas, and then on the other tracks we have, you know, state-of-the-art hygiene stations where you clean your shoes, you know, you've gone through them, I've gone through them, clean your shoes, you know, and have a antiseptic spray that we put on it, that will help. We will... The mud is the main vector, and human beings with mud on their boots are the main vector for the spread of the disease. So we're going to have, you know, we're going to have to do more to upgrade it, those trackways that we keep open and have platforms and keep them away from the kauri trees. So I've put in the mural proposal a targeted rate to protect our natural environment. I did that last week, you know, that will mean that we can probably increase our investment in stopping the spread of the disease by 20 or 30 times as much. We're talking about maybe anything between 80 million and 120 million that we'll have to spend over a 10-year period. But you know, is it worth doing that to preserve our kauri trees? You know, I personally think it is, and you as a ratepayer will have the opportunity to have your say as to whether you want to make that as a targeted rate dedicated to that particular purpose.
Phil, is that something that's snuck up on the council, or is this have we been sort of up to speed on this for a wee while?
For quite a while. We did the first study. We're way ahead of anywhere else in the country in terms of dealing with it, and it's not just in Auckland. Fortunately, it hasn't got out to the Hoonuas, but it may only be a matter of time. The Waitakere's are the worst areas affected. The first infection was detected in 2008, I think. There's a little bit of it out in the Great Barrier. There's a few other areas north of here. But this is something that the government will want to work with us on because, you know, Tane Mahuta is one of the great tourist attractions of
the
north.
It's the big girl.
Go and see Tane. Not a girl, mate. It's a Tane. We've absolutely got to tackle it. It's something that, you know, it's something that we human beings don't control in terms of the disease developing, but we can control it in terms of the spread of the disease, or we can restrict it. And I think we've got to put every effort into that. But, you know, interested in any feedback you get from your listeners, how important is it to you that we protect, preserve our kauri tree for future generations? And to me, hey, it's bloody important. It's something that we just have to do. It's inconceivable that we could allow our kauri tree to be eradicated by this disease.
It's one of these things in the modern times too, where we need to be wary of the fact that I know we probably won't get the results immediately, but in 100 years' time, you don't want it to be like the Kaipara, which is the Kaipara Harbour up there, or the sand dunes. All those sand dunes up in the Kaipara Harbour used to be kauri trees.
Yeah. I mean, the landscape of New Zealand would have been magnificent. None of us are
that was all logged, wasn't it? Hey, before we run out of time, Phil, I want to ask you about this. Suddenly, the whole country could be in drought. Holy hell, what's going on? What about our lakes? We don't want to have to put bricks in the cisterns again like we did that time.
Yeah. No, well, look, I've got tank water at home, and I went out.
Well,
that's
good for you.
Yeah. Well, no, not so good because you know, we were in mud up till 3 weeks ago. Now we're in dust, and I tapped the tanks, and I've got 75,000 litres of water in tanks, and the two main tanks I use for my home are only half full. They were overflowing and creating a little river off the tanks 3 weeks ago, and now I've had guests staying, so you know, there's.
Left the shower on.
Yeah, five of us in the household. I spend too long in the shower, my wife says, in the morning. How would she know? She's not even awake at that time.
I know. They go on about it, don't they? Yeah. Should all shower together.
Yeah. So we're going to have to watch that. I see on, if I can believe my cell phone, it says we're going to get rain early next week. I mean, it's been a magnificent 10 days. Fantastic.
Well, I'm not complaining about that, but I do think we don't want to get into another situation. I know that Napier's in a situation now, which is quite interesting too. There's a story about some cruise ships taking all that water, isn't there?
Yeah, that's kind of curious. I haven't seen whether that's the proven factor. I'm just looking out the window, and they've got two cruise ships down there at the moment in Auckland. But we're fine at the moment.
Our lakes are all good at the moment?
Our lakes are in pretty good shape, and we can also draw from the Waikato. And the only thing with the Waikato, I mean, it's properly treated, mate. It's okay.
Okay.
By the time it's gone through the UV and the chlorination, it's perfectly safe for you and me. Nobody's got botulism from our water or whatever they got.
The farm runoff makes me sick, but
Yeah. No, the Waikato's not in wonderful shape, but by the time it comes through our pipelines, I live up next door to the Ardmore Water Treatment Plant, and, you know, it had trouble with sedimentation back in March, as you'll recall, but it does a fantastic job.
Oh, that was way back in March.
Yeah. And you know, things, we're pretty lucky in Auckland in terms of our water supply. Touch wood. I hate to say that because I'll put the mocker on it. But you know, you look at Napier, you look at what's happened in Havelock North, you look at what's happening down in the Canterbury Plains. Climate change. If you know, I know Donald Trump still doesn't think it's real, but
Donald,
it is.
Donald Trump only sleeps 3 or 4 hours a night. Did you know that?
Yeah, it shows. It's been killing off the brain cells, I think. you know, look, we're okay at the moment, but there'll come a point if we monitor the thing very closely. If we've got to say to people, hey, don't just put your sprinklers on. If you have to water, just use, you know, do it by hand. But we're not in that position yet. But it is shaping up. You know, this is for this early in the summer, getting this to these temperatures and this long dry period is pretty damn unusual.
All right, Phil, thank you very much for talking to us. We'll speak to you again this time next week.
Okay, Mikey. Thanks, mate. All the best. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.